We are back from our little August break, and this month's show is about the video game Minecraft. We talk about videos and a bunch of other things that there are links for in the show notes. You might be able to see those on your podcast application, your music player of choice, but if not, they're all provided for you on the artisticactivism.org site, including the climategames.nl website for the live-action role-playing game that's happening around the climate talks in the Netherlands, which is very cool, and I definitely recommend you checking out. But I'm already giving away things that are in this episode, so I'm just going to get out of the way. Enjoy the show.
This is the Pop Culture Salvage Expeditions. My name is Steve Lambert.
I am Pat Gerardo.
And I'm Stephen Duncombe.
Before we get started, our topic today is Minecraft, the video game.
And that's mine as in dig, not mind as in think. Minecraft.
Yeah. Minecraft.
No thinking.
No thinking, just digging.
So today we're going to learn about Minecraft. We're going to learn from two very special experts. But before we get to our experts, I want to go to our mailbag. We have a couple letters about our previous shows that we got sent in. One is from a very honored, I was excited to get this letter, Mr. Jason Grote.
Yeah, and Jason is an old friend. He was in an activist group I was part of way back in the 1990s in Lower East Side. But he's then gone on to become quite an accomplished playwright and one of the writers for Mad Men.
And other shows. Which we can't remember the names of.
I know, but they were awesome.
They were terrible. But Jason Grote is a very talented guy and a very thoughtful guy. And he sent in this letter, and he did what a lot of you can do. Like, you're probably understanding what we're doing with this show and able to do it in your own life. Like, you know, you watch TV and think about how it could work, or read a magazine and what can we learn from this. So Jason was doing that around our TGI Fridays episode, where we went to TGI Fridays in Union Square.
What he was responding to is in our show, one of the things talked about and we noticed is how actually incredibly diverse the diners were, as opposed to pretty much any other restaurant around Union Square.
So this is what Jason said. He said, there are two things at work that weren't mentioned, and these are really nice insights. One is the obvious, that working and middle-class people of color families are in many of their preferences indistinguishable from their white counterparts. The second is a little more subtle. Given the history of Jim Crow and the racism of many small business owners, many African Americans would rather deal with a corporate restaurant because there's a level of accountability. There's a national brand, probably an official anti-discrimination policy, a responsive management, etc. If a national chain like Denny's discriminates, something can be done about it. Jason also said, I don't know if there's anything in this insight that could be applied to activism, but there might be something related to the fact that most anarchist affinity groups are white, while trusted activist brands, in quotes, trade unions, nonprofits, the Democrats, tend to be more diverse, even if they're less responsive to the issues facing the majority of the POC, people of color. And I think his point there is that these big organizations, unions, Democrats, are the known brands like Denny's that have some kind of accountability.
Yeah, and I think sometimes those people on the left actually sort of fetishize the small businesses. You know, we hate Starbucks because, man, they're like homogenizing our neighborhood.
Why would anyone go there?
And, you know,
we did that today, actually, yeah. Steve and I.
Yeah, exactly.
Got into a discussion.
And, you know, my experience with small cafes is around here in Greenwich Village, you go into most small cafes and the clientele is almost entirely white and middle class. You go into a Starbucks and it actually looks more like the city. There is, you know, basically working class people. There's people of color. There's people who are office workers. There's executives. And part of that does have to do with it's an open space, which is one of the things we're talking about with TGIFs, is it's a space which is not owned by any one group or one person and therefore is kind of open and friendly for all.
But the thing that Jason's pointing out is that We talked about it being comfortable, and he's talking about being comfortable in a way that I had never thought of.
Yeah, I love the point that he brought up. But it is that shift in culture as well. Remember, Woolworth was the store that people had to boycott to make it into you know, that big national store that would allow for African Americans to be at the table. And I remember growing up, I always went to Woolworth, and I didn't understand till later that it was a store that segregated. And to me, that seems so weird that Woolworth, which I would always see full of people of color, was a place of that contention. But I, you know, it makes me think of Jason's statement is that none of these things are fixed, right? So large chains are these places of comfort for people of color currently, but small businesses can have, we can impact them and make those changes as well.
Yeah, and there's another good point in there that when Southern Leadership Conference, you know, went to boycott the way they were treated in restaurants, they didn't pick the mom and pop shop on the corner. They picked Woolworths for a reason because they had that accountability. So there's this historical connection too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that is why SNCC, who were the ones who actually started the boycotts down in the South, really picked these chain restaurants. It's because they understood that those restaurants were actually accountable to their boards of directors, and their boards of directors did not want the bad publicity that would be, you know, outside of the South. That Woolworths mm-hmm. in Chicago, Woolworths in Detroit, Woolworths in New York were just as impacted by the Woolworths in Mississippi or Alabama or Arkansas.
So thank you, Jason, for sending that letter. We really appreciate it. And if you have a thought, you can drop us an email on the Artistic Activism site. There's a contact link there. I've got one other one from a guy named Paul. And he wrote and said, this is all great, but the thing about pop culture is it's so well-funded. And how do you compete with these spectacles, these things that are so well-supported, marketing budgets, and so well-funded?
Well, and I think that the way to think about that is that we're not trying to replicate popular culture. They're always going to outspend us. They're always going to out-spectacularize us. But what we're really about here at the Pop Cultural Salvage Expeditions is trying to get at the root desires which pop culture feeds and then sort of reroute those root desires mm-hmm. into a culture that we can create. And that might be rerouting the sort of desires that are met by, say, a mass chain and rerouting them into small businesses. And so working with small businesses to help them figure out how to be more opening to people outside of just a set number of people and a set type of people.
Yeah, I would add to that, I agree with everything Steve just said. And for me, I look at pop culture as an opportunity to use that towards my activism, right? So I'm not competing with it. I'm using it as a resource that I can then use towards my own benefit. And so, yeah, it's that disruption of it that I find interesting.
Great. So like I said, if you want to send us a note, we'd be happy to respond. It's at artisticactivism.org, and you just click on contact and you can send us a note. The link to the podcast there is too, and you can subscribe from the site as well.
All right, so we're ready to begin?
We are ready to begin.
Ooh, yeah.
Today we are talking about Minecraft, and like I said before, we've got two very special guests here.
Well, before we do even do that, we had to actually prep for this a little bit. And our two special guests insisted on some conditions, like what was going to be in the green room. And they said, you got to get us MLG food.
What is MLG food?
And what is MLG food?
It's Doritos and Mountain Dew.
Yeah, and we threw in a pepperoni pizza just as an added bonus.
What does MLG stand for?
Major League Gaming.
Okay.
And so you might have figured out who our special guests might be. I think we'll let them introduce themselves.
Let's start on the right here in the green shirt. Sir, could you please tell us who you are?
Hello. My name is Sydney Rilladunkum.
My name is Sebastian Rilladunkum.
And from the last names, you might have figured something out, which these are my offspring. Offspring, which I'm very proud of, and offspring, which spend an inordinate amount of time playing games, including Minecraft. And we were thinking about, okay, what we want to do is step into the sort of popular culture of gaming. We thought, well, what better thing than Minecraft? For those of you that don't know, people that don't know, Minecraft is basically, it's a game that enables players to build constructions, build worlds, essentially, out of blocks in a 3D-generated sort of sandbox. And the gameplay revolves around mining, breaking and placing blocks to build and destroy things. And it was originally created by a Swedish programmer, Marcus Notch person, who's actually famous within the world of gaming. And the first version was released in 2009 as an open source project.
That's what we downloaded. Woo!
Yeah,
well, right. Beta players!
But beginning by 2011, 1 million people had downloaded it. By 2014, the game had 100 million registered users, making it one of the best-selling video games of all time. And Microsoft just recently bought Minecraft for $2.5 billion, making Marcus Notch Person a very, very rich programmer. But the cool thing about Minecraft is that it's a world which is created by its users. Or we should say it's a world's created, because there's thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of different worlds which are created. Just as we were sitting here, Sydney and Sebastian created a world for us.
So it's really more of a platform for building other things, building worlds, building... Can you build characters? Is that how you guys would describe Minecraft?
I would say... I'm not sure you can build characters. I mean, you can build your own character. You can select your skin, you can select your name, and you can select how you react and say to people. Like, there are people that definitely just spam curse words and, you know... are not nice people, but there's also some people that are really nice, so it just really depends.
Sebastian, do you want to add to that?
Like what Sid said, is you can't really create a character.
What do you build there?
Like, are you going to edit that stuff out?
I can edit whatever you want.
Yeah. Okay, wait, can we restart on... Wait, what's the question again?
That's great.
I forgot it.
What do you make in Minecraft?
Oh, yeah. In Minecraft, you can make pretty much anything. You can make a castle, which would take a long time. You can make the Mona Lisa out of blocks. You could pretty much do anything.
Okay.
So you guys spend a lot of time on Minecraft.
Yep.
From the outside, it's a mystery to me how you can spend so much time in Minecraft. Why do you spend so much time in Minecraft?
One of the reasons I spend a lot of time in Minecraft is because it's, I guess, like a break. Because it's more complicated, but in the same way it's more simple than our actual lives. So it's just easy.
How is it more complicated?
You can't buy anything at the store. You have to actually, work for it. In the working, I mean, playing on your computer. But,
Wait, you have to work on it, work for it in the game, or you have to work for it in real life?
In the game.
Okay.
But it's also more simple because you don't have to worry about everything. Like, you don't have to worry about, did you pack this? Am I forgetting this? Am I failing this class? Am I failing that class?
Are you trying to tell me something, Sid?
No.
It is the end of the year. We haven't seen the report cards yet. Hey, Sebastian, what do you really like about Minecraft? Why do you like spending time on Minecraft?
What I like about spending time on Minecraft is because most of the time I'm not surviving. I'm playing with other people. I may be playing a game where... you play paintball or build in a competition, or you could just play with your friends.
So what you said, I'm not surviving. You're talking about survivor mode?
Yeah, there's two main modes, creative and survival. Creative is you can do anything. You can place any blocks, but in survival, you have to build for the blocks. If you want to make a house, you have to... get the wood, make the planks, melt the sand, make windows.
Whoa. Yeah. You have to make windows? So if you don't do that stuff in survivor mode, you die.
Yeah, pretty much. So another huge feature about survival mode is, I think there's 7 different monsters. They're all trying to kill you. There's no other way to put it. And so you kind of have to survive, I guess, the night, because they only spawn at night. So you spend, the day building, collecting materials, preparing for the night, and then the night comes, and you have to survive, and then it's, an endless loop.
So you're either creating, you're just building stuff, or you're trying to survive.
Yep.
And how long have you two been playing, and do you consider yourself experts?
We've been playing
2009.
Yeah, beta. We got our first version when there was limited like stuff. It's hard to remember. The skins were all different, and there was like an edge of the world that you could meet, and you just fall down in an endless loop. Yeah.
Also, back then, not a lot of people played. When it just came out, I don't know, 500,000 people played it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably.
And actually, just tell people how old you are.
I'm 11.
I'm 10.
So
we were playing this game at like 6 and 4. It was like, it was the basics.
So how many people how many other people at your school play Minecraft?
Well, I would say everyone at my school has definitely heard of it. I would say like a third of people play in my school.
And
like fluent, because we play Minecraft sometimes in our classes.
Really?
So, yeah.
Well, we should say that Sid goes to a special public school in New York City.
Teach to the game school?
Yeah, it's a teach to the game. It's no teach to the test. It's play to learn, learn to play. It's called Quest to Learn. It's an awesome school. And it's built around ideas of making education into a game.
Yeah. Only like a third of people can play completely consistently.
Like would call themselves a Minecraft player.
Yep.
Okay. And is it mostly boys or boys and girls or mostly girls?
A lot more boys.
Yeah?
Yeah. The majority is boys.
Why do you think boys like Minecraft better?
I think it's marketed. They're trying to change that, but I think it was marketed to boys, definitely.
Wait, in what way?
So when Minecraft was at its peak... So it went from all about building to this like crazy everything about killing. And then it went down and that was like kind of even. But I think as most popular time when a bunch of people got hooked was when it was kill. And I know that was the time I really got really, really into it. So I think definitely more boys play it.
Now there's one of the things about Minecraft, which is really cool, is that because it's open source, you can manipulate the code. And so there's all these hacks that you use. So can you explain what a hack is and what some of them are?
Okay, so I don't use hacks. They're called command blocks.
Okay, whatever.
And command blocks, they like can generate stuff in your world. So people do crazy commands like there's no rolling in Minecraft. So some guy said, why don't we just make a command which lets people roll?
Now, you have to understand everything in Minecraft is made out of blocks. And so it's all four edges. And so the idea that you could roll in Minecraft.
Or like make a wheel.
Is pretty radical, yeah.
So this guy invented the wheel.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. It just gave the illusion because it would teleport you. So you're looking at the ground. It would teleport you. So you're looking at the ground.
Talking to the mic.
Sorry. Teleport you.
Sydney was acting it out. So.
Teleported you looking at the ground. Teleported you in, like, your face in it. So it was black for a second. Teleported your face. No, looking up, and then you just went back to normal, and you moved like a couple blocks.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah, I love doing barrels into water.
One thing I like about Minecraft is you don't have to play Minecraft. You could play other video games inside of Minecraft, like those multiplayer servers where you could play like games like I don't know, like Halo. Also, there's like mini games where you capture a castle with your teammates.
Can you play Pac-Man in Minecraft?
Someone made Pac-Man in Minecraft.
Can you play Miss Pac-Man in Minecraft?
So it wasn't that you were Pac-Man. It was that you were someone and you were going, you were like running in this like huge maze. There were like these little dots and then people, with command blocks, people made like ghosts that are made out of blocks and it would despawn all the blocks and teleport all the blocks one block forward, then replace air. So they would move, and then the people put in the same pathfinding algorithm. So they would move all around the maze, and if you ran into them, you would die.
So they basically made Pac-Man.
Yeah.
All right.
Or Miss Pac-Man. It really doesn't, like...
There's little distinguishing the two.
So, you know, do you know what your dad does for a living?
Yeah. He works at NYU.
Okay, well, that's for a living. What do I do with Steve and Pat?
You go around the world training people. Oh, I got this one. Training artists to be think more like activists. Training activists think more like artivists. Oh, got it.
Boom, bam, you nailed that one. Okay, so what we try to do in these podcasts, and you're going to help us out tonight, is that we try to think about how we can use pop culture in our work and how the things that you find so attractive in Minecraft and the things that you really like in Minecraft, how activists might use some of that insight to actually enliven activism, make activism more effective, appeal to more people. So
you mean like activist craft?
Yes. Activist craft, exactly. And so
he's a natural.
Exactly. So what are your thoughts on that? Like, what could we learn from Minecraft as activists who are working with artists and artists who are working with activists?
I think one thing that makes Minecraft really strong is there's two things. One thing is that it's cheap, and there's almost always something. Like every year, there's like 10 updates, so like they add more stuff and. That's really fun. And so it kind of adds, like, you know, just what's going to be on next, you know? People speculate and designers give out hints. Also, another thing that's really fun is a community. Because, like, I usually play with just random people because I have a YouTube channel.
What is your YouTube channel?
Super Squid. It's on the first page now.
Okay. So If people want to check out Super Squid's YouTube page, we'll have a link on the show notes that are available at artisticactivism.org.
No, but so what I'm trying to get is I play with my friends a lot, and that's cool. But then also a lot of the time I'm interacting with people that I don't know, and they're being recorded. And I'm not asking for the permission to be recorded. The interview is being recorded. And a lot of times the people try to get in my recordings.
I love the idea of innovations and to think about innovations within activism. And I think a lot of times we get stuck thinking that there's nothing else to do beyond the protests, march, going down to D.C., doing the banners, coming up with the chants.
Flash mob!
And to the extent also that we, at the most, change some of the props within our work, but we don't really change the format. So we're not upgrading our programming. And I love that idea of thinking of innovations.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's really cool about Minecraft is you're given sort of a sandbox and basic tools to work with, but within that you're always innovating and people are always creating and building new worlds. And so you go back to, I've watched these guys go back to a world that they created and someone has rechanged it completely. And so it's this idea of, yeah, that not only do we innovate some of our tactics, but give people tools to innovate for themselves.
Sydney, what you said about the multiple updates coming out each year, I'm seeing on the Minecraft website, you know, that 1.8.7 came out 19 days ago and 1.8.6 came out 29 days ago. So it seems like every 2 weeks or every month an update comes out. Something new is happening. And I like the idea of these, you know, hints at what's to come. Steve and I talk a lot in the workshops about drafts, right? And that you're never, if you're doing an action, like Pat, you're saying a march or something like that. You don't do one march and then you're done. You do many throughout your career, right? And that each one builds on the next. You add new things. And instead of thinking like, okay, well, we're done with that, that you'd have new releases that each time generated excitement among that audience and that you could also tease about, like, what's going to happen next time?
March 3.7.
You seem to be upset about something, Sebastian?
That actually doesn't happen.
So what doesn't happen?
You said that you could go into a world and somebody could change what you do. That doesn't happen unless you're on multiplayer. Because if that did happen, somebody could build the best castle, a huge castle, like a guy built a replica of the Death Star in Minecraft. And what if somebody just blew that up?
Okay, so you have to be
that
able
actually happened in the movie. Mm-hmm. I just want to point that out.
No, but I think you're okay. So I stand corrected, is that sometimes you can open stuff up to change, But sometimes you actually just can lock it down and say, this is the version I want. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. But there's another idea there, too, that you have some autonomy within the game, right? Like, you have a space where you can make your own thing. And I think we've seen this kind of thing, like, at the People's Climate March. There were all the different segments of the march. People built sculptures and interactive performances that happened within the structure of that march.
Yeah, and I do think that this is something which has really happened for the past 15 years, 20 years, around the autonomy groups, the affinity groups, the autonomous affinity groups, it's made demonstrations much more exciting, because then people get to do their own thing. And as long as they agree on central rules, and, you know, to bring it back to the computer sort of metaphor, as long as you agree on sort of central algorithms and you agree on sort of a central toolbox, which everybody shares, then you're allowed a great deal of latitude to do what you want to do with your own group around those things. And it becomes a nice way of thinking about how we might stage demonstrations. It's not so much have demonstrations where we decide everything that happens, but instead facilitate spaces in which demonstrations could actually happen. And therefore, people would actually demonstrate their autonomy, demonstrate their own points of view, demonstrate, you know, their creativity.
But I think one of the things that would be helpful to kind of tease out, because I think we also kind of conflate activists and activist organizations. In the organizational form, I think that's what is an obstacle a lot of time to that innovation, right? It's once an organization claims a march or a campaign, it's more of the copyright trademark mentality rather than like a Minecraft, when you have individuals acting upon their own behalf, that there's more fluidity and openness to sharing. And how can we think about this kind of innovation that happens within, for many activists in a nonprofit 501c3 structure, as opposed to the individual activist?
Mm-hmm. And actually sort of build it into the program, in other words.
Right.
Yeah.
When we talk about examples in this, we often talk about marches because I think it's a shorthand for an activist action. But kind of going bigger, we're talking about groups and what groups do. You can have a common goal. You can have a sort of framework. You know, in Minecraft, it's blocks, right? The blocks are colored different things, and there's certain ones that do different things. But we're working with a basic set of tools or some parameters. And then within that, you can do whatever you want. In the past, we've talked about this as rules to a game. But instead of just within one action, it can be a multitude of tactics, right? All working towards a different goal. And I think one of the things that drives me crazy about meetings is like, let's come to consensus on what we're going to do. And if we can't, we all have to agree, and we're all going to work together because, you know, ideally in the world that we want, we all work together, we all agree. That doesn't work for me, you know? And I don't think it works for anyone. And what Minecraft seems to do really well is let people do whatever they want. And within those parameters.
Are there set rules, guys, of which you know, that will get you kicked off of a world?
Okay, so if you spam, you can definitely get kicked. If you are mean to everyone, say inappropriate things in chat, get kicked. Or banned, permanently. If you're just being a jerk, you get kicked. Because they're owners of the servers, and the servers don't want to get a bad rep for having, like, these bad people on.
So, but outside of that, you're pretty much free to do what you want to do.
Yep.
Cool. Okay, so I've got another, one of the things I've noticed with you guys, and I'd love for you to talk about it, is you guys created your own skins, and you've sort of created your own avatars, or your own characters. Can you talk about that, like what you did and why you did that?
Well, if everybody had the exact same skin, it wouldn't be as fun. Like, imagine everybody looked exactly the same. Like, your name tag is different, but your skin is the same. So you can create your own skin at, like, a website, or you can download one.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
I think one of the problems originally was before, you didn't have skins. Like, it was just, like, everyone looked like the same exact person. And it was kind of like, skins are, like, a way to differentiate yourselves from everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Do you find when you're Sid the Squid, is that your nom de
Super Squid.
So, okay, Super Squid. And who are you, Sebs? He's got a mouthful of Doritos.
My username's Sid Seb because when it first started, we were both sharing an account. So Sid made a new account, and I took the old one.
Okay, well, that's what little brothers do. And do you feel like you get to be someone else, or do you feel like you're you when you're actually in a game?
I kind of feel like I'm someone else because I have to like keep a YouTube channel, so I go from like Super Squid to from like Sid to back to Super Squid. And I think it was my friends. I film with a couple of my friends. And they all go to their characters. Just because, like, I don't usually go on rages a lot. But in Minecraft, I don't know, something makes me rage about stuff. So, my friends, like, my Super Squid personality is I just rage about everything that's wrong. Like, in one of my videos, you can hear it in the video, and I'm like, pink is not a color of the rainbow. I can't believe everyone is putting pink in the rainbow. And then when I win, I'm like, you're our one. Take that, Jack. And so I'm much like ragey.
Well, I think, I mean, this is something that I've always thought about, which is like how when we put on a costume, when we take on a role, we're like allowed to do different things. And I remember like Billionaires for Bush and working with Billionaires for Bush. It was fun to dress up like a billionaire and say, you know, we support George Bush because we should tax the poor people more. And it allowed a certain freedom. And this goes back to things like, you know, the Boston Tea Party, okay, where you had a bunch of white settlers dress up as Indians as a way to actually express what they wanted to express. And sure, it was through the sort of racist tropes at the time, but it got at this idea that as these white colonialists, they didn't feel empowered to do what they did. But if they put on a different skin, they could actually do this. And I'm wondering, like, as activists, whether we allow ourselves to perform in that way and to become different characters.
So my experience is that there's so much earnestness, and so it's so much about your authentic identity, right? Like, this is who I am, this is where I come from. And the more sort of authenticity you bring to your identity, the more credibility you have, the more you're heard. And it sometimes creates these weird competitions that are not helpful.
And also it's because so many people feel like they're not seen as themselves. So putting on an extra costume feels like a layer of oppressiveness. And it is, you know, that sense of how do we make play and fun out of it instead of, you know, extra hiding. I think so much of activist language is about the coming out of the, you know, whatever closet it is that you're in and revealing yourself.
So your thing, I mean, this is interesting because what your take on the costumes is if my take on the costumes is I get to be liberated because, you know, I get to be a white guy every day in the world. And so finally I get to be something else and feel liberated from that. What you're saying is like for other people, the liberation is actually getting to be who you actually are.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really hard to escape personas though. You know, like I don't know what your experience is, but that even when you're at work, you're your professional self. When you're alone really is when maybe you are yourself, but anytime you're among other people, you have to put on some kind of persona. And I guess the thing that bothers me is when we make a group where we encourage people or those personas are rewarded instead of just like the lack of persona is what is rewarded. You know what I mean?
Mm. But, you know, talking about the billion-dollar self-help industry is all about that authenticity, right? So there is something about that people don't want to hide. It doesn't mean that they don't want to play, but that there is it. You have to address the authenticity angle, right? You have to address that people spend most of their lives not having their voices heard. So how do you allow space for that to happen? And I think the costuming may not be as interesting to people who are engaged in fights and battles for being seen.
Yeah. I just had another thought. I'm curious what you think. Even if you are choosing to take on a persona, like say you're become a billionaire for Bush, or you become like, you know, another one that we've seen a lot that activists use is like a superhero character, right? Super Barrio Man that comes and defends the people from the neighborhood, from the landlords or whatever. That all those different expressions of different personas that aren't you are all a part of you, right? And so maybe there's a way that we can encourage a variety of healthy personas, like you could in Minecraft, that are ways of expressing parts of who you are, things that maybe need to get out, but wouldn't feel comfortable as saying, this is the true me, this is exactly how I feel.
Or I would say the switch of that is, how do you use your invisibility as a strength, right? It's, I don't know if you remember the great book, The Spook That Sat Near the Door.
I never read
and
it.
And I'm forgetting the author's name.
It was turned into
a movie as well, but it was centered around a black man who was privy to all this government information because no one was paying attention to him.
The
right?
ultimate invisible man.
Exactly. And so how do you use your invisibility as a point of strength? I think is another aspect that, you know, would be a great one to play with for people.
Yeah.
Sid?
So I just want to, I really like what you guys are talking about how, like, being heard. And I just want to talk about another feature of a Minecraft server are the chat boxes. They're kind of like, kind of separate chat rooms. That's part of the ways some people get heard. Like, they just, you know, type in there. And sometimes people listen, sometimes they don't. And sometimes that really aggravates me, and sometimes it really aggravates other people. So people start spamming. So people start getting angry. Yeah.
But I think that does get at this. I think that one of the things that those chat rooms do is that it allows people who are more comfortable typing out their ideas to actually express themselves that way. And this is something also we can learn, is that so much of, say, a meeting, for example. You know, we think of these meetings as these ideal egalitarian spaces. They are if you're an extrovert and you like to talk and you like to have people hear you. But if you're not that person, it's actually not a great experience.
And
one of the things I think is great about gaming is it allows people who can be shy, or it allows people who like to express themselves virtually, or in this case, express themselves through writing as opposed to saying things, to have these different modes of expression. And we have to think about that and how we allow for those sorts of spaces in our activist work as well.
Which also makes me think, you know, I think a lot about how technology allows us to have multiple experiences. Yet in the real world, we seem to only be stuck in one. And is there a way to expand or push on that? Because, there is. I can't imagine, even though it doesn't mean it's not possible, but I can't imagine how you could have a actual physical meeting with different modalities of expressing yourself going on. And I still see people having trouble with Skyping someone in, right? That's the video conferencing is still a difficulty for people because they get
such
all
a disaster.
I know.
But there is, when everyone's online, there's so many different ways and people adapt to that. Yeah, I'm just always curious about that.
One of the things we do in our workshops is we don't allow people to use words sometimes. We make people draw, even though we know that many people's drawing talent is not their strength. And it really is, in some ways, one, to give space to those people who can communicate visually better than orally. But it's also to break the people that can speak very well out of the sort of cliches of speaking, out of the normality of, like, this is what I do as a meeting. This is how I think of a tactic. This is how I think of a strategy. If you actually have to draw the picture, it sort of short circuits that a bit.
I love that.
There are other games, other ways of people have brought games into the real world. I believe it's called augmented reality gaming, right? ARG. Yeah. And this is this genre of people that make games that actually happen in the real world. And so they'll say, okay, we're going to meet in Union Square, and all of us are involved in, one I remember is about spies. And, you know, you're trying to figure out who these other people are in the real world that are also playing the game, and then identify them and, you know, kill them or something with a squirt gun. But do you know about this, Sid?
Me and a couple of my friends, it's called LARPing, live action role playing.
There's that too. Yeah, that's another way of bringing a game into the real world, right?
Yeah.
And aren't you're doing, it's the end of your school year, right? And at your school, last week you actually create stuff. Aren't you creating games in real space right now?
Yeah, we're just creating arcade games. So we just finished up a skee ball machine.
Like a physical, ooh, real, in the room skee ball machine. Mm-hmm. Wow. Ah. So anyway, there are these games that happen in the real world, and it still leans more on the side of a game, but you're engaging. There's some movies about this. One's called The Institute that's on Netflix, which I have not seen, but we can put a link to it. That's a documentary about one of these big games that happened in San Francisco, where you had hundreds of people that were walking around the city that were seeing the city in a completely different way and participating in the city. And there would be signs up on the wall that, you know, were about the game that if you were a regular person just seemed like any other sign. So that to me is like pretty smart, but it's still just used for fun, and fun is great. But I think there's a way that we could use that.
Well, and I think we actually are doing it. We're just not doing it consciously and not doing it very well. When we have actions, whether they're a march or a rally or a demonstration or a street performance, we're basically setting up games. That is, we're setting up a play space. We're setting up a set of rules, and we're having characters, us, the audience, and so on and so forth. And I think that one of the things we can learn from games is to be really conscious of that's what we're doing and actually try to create a very fun and successful game.
And I would also love to see the process to get to that march, that action, be a game, right? Because there's a lot of boring meetings that happen in order for those, you know, games to be produced. But so it's not a fun process throughout.
Yeah. Well, I have good news. I was just in London for the 2 Degrees Festival, which is like a climate action arts festival put on by an organization called Arts Admin. And one of the other artist presenters was a project called the Climate Games. And this is a project that a lot of people are working on. It's being organized, where it's going to be at the UN Climate Conference later this year, next year. And they're making games out of the protests, basically. And I believe the site is climategames.net, but I'll find out for sure and put it in the notes. The other thing they were doing, though, was making that development process of the games very participatory. You could wander in and become a part of it. There was a lot of like group activities in coming up with the whole project and all the different facets of it, from making a mobile phone app, which is what the sort of one form of it will take, but also what the games would be and how that happened. And so that might be a model looking forward of how not only the outcome, but the process becomes game-like. Yeah.
So, how would they make a game out of a protest?
So, I don't know all of it. It's a great question. But from what I understand, you would have your phone and you would have this Climate Games app. And then you would get like a task or a mission or something, right? And there would be other players that you could play with. And the games that you would be playing would have, you would, you know, get points, or there would be a way that you could win or lose. But at the same time, what you were doing would be disrupting different meetings or people trying to get, you know, from one place to another.
Okay.
In college, I remember we had a protest where we had it as a scavenger hunt. So we had to get 5 fraternity people to sign a petition. We had to get, you know, we had to deliver, you know, a message to a professor's office. We had to get the president's, you know, office to take something there. So that was a way that we were doing it to get people not only throughout the campus, but get other people involved in it as
so
well.
So they were all objectives of the yes. campaign, but yes. they were organized in a scavenger hunt.
And what I like about the direction this is moving in is that there's a lot of games for social change out there. I mean, there's actually games for social change, conferences and so on, of which one goes online and then engages in sort of progressive gameplay. But I think what we're saying here is actually, no, that's the wrong way to go. Or at least it's not the wrong way, but there's a better way to go, which is to bring games outside of the computers and bring them out into the protests, into the meetings, into the very process that we work with every day.
So that site I just looked up is actually climategames.nl, as in Netherlands. Yeah. So Sebastian, if you go to the climategames.nl site, you can find out how to play. And I think what would be great, I don't know if they're doing it, would be a way for you to play while that meeting is happening, I think, in the Netherlands. Yeah. Wouldn't you want to play from here in New York?
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Or maybe we could take a trip to the Netherlands. That would be even more fun.
Would you want it? Which would you rather do, play from home or go to the Netherlands?
Play from home.
So what we're going to do before we go is talk about our new favorite thing. And usually we talk about something that we're excited about that's on TV or in the movies or out now that's kind of new, right, that we're excited about. This time, though, I'm changing it a little bit. It can be new or it can be something that's very old, like classic, all-time favorite thing that you like in pop culture that you think people that are listening to this need to check out because it's good, right? So are you ready to go? What do you got?
Sid's YouTube channel.
Oh, you think people should check out Sid's YouTube channel. All right, good call. Good brother. Good brother.
I say check out Zoo Nation.
Zoo Nation?
Zoo Nation. Show on Netflix. It's real good.
Really? What is Zoo Nation? Why is it good? Why should I check it out?
It's about zombies. And it's about a group of survivors, and they're really awesome.
All right. Steve, have you seen Zoo Nation?
I haven't seen Zoo Nation. I'm kind of freaked out by zombies.
You just let him watch the zombie show on his own?
I'm not going to watch it. I actually didn't even know he was watching it.
Mom knew. I binge-watched the entire first season in a day.
Man. Well, your mom knows better.
Who wants to be next?
Brains.
This is always a hard question for me. It's odd because I really love pop culture. But I'm going to go with that when Steve and I were coming in from Toronto last week, this woman cleared customs early with me, and she was young and just super excited about being in New York. And she was here for 3 days, and her friend were here. They're like, what should we do? And it was a beautiful spring. And this just popped into my head, the roller disco at Central Park. And it's Gay Pride weekend. Yeah. If anybody happened to be in New York, whether it's Gay Pride weekend or not, go to the roller disco in Central Park. It's free. It's flamboyant, it's fun, it's disco, it's roller skating. It is
I stumbled across
thing.
It one time. Okay. And just so if you've never seen this, walking through the park and then there's some people that set up a stereo and a bunch of other people around in a circle. And then the ones in the middle are on roller skates just dancing.
It is so cool.
Another thing I like on social media is... a YouTube channel called Vsauce.
Why is Vsauce good and why should we check it out?
Why I like it is because it has science videos. Well, not really science, but like videos like kind of what would happen. Kind of.
Give me an example.
Like one of the videos is like, is my red eagle green? Which was saying that my black may be your orange. But you would call it black.
That is really mind-blowing.
Yeah, so young and already a stoner.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
man,
you know...
Why is the world so green?
The fruit doesn't fall far from the tree.
So, Pat, what about you?
Yes, besides having done disco roller skating as a young person every Saturday, I used to love it. I would say my classic favorite pop culture for activists is the movie Revenge of the Nerds. And I've always loved this. I use this as an organizer. It is a great... So everything you need to know about organizing is in that movie. And I stand by that. It is about staying true to who you are. right? And okay. using the ascribed characteristics for you and your group to your advantage. So the nerds didn't try to become jocks. They didn't try to become anything else. And they took their nerdness and they used it as a strength. There's also a lesson in a movie about aligning yourself with other oppressed groups. So the nerds trying to form their fraternity weren't being recognized by any of the leading fraternities on campus. So they go to the National Black Fraternity, who actually opens up and sponsors them. And so they get, right, so they get that. And then instead of trying to, you know, be appealing to the cheerleaders on campus, they connect with other nerd women on campus and they start dating and they have their own parties and they make their own fun out of it. I think if you're an organizer, want to be an organizer, this is a movie that you should see. It will validate a lot of the work that you're already doing and hopefully give you new ideas of what you could be doing.
That is going on to our reading list on the site, just on the basis of Pat's description.
Well, and there's another good lesson in there, which we often talk about, which is there's always some parts of pop culture that are just not going to work for us and that we should drop. And there's some like really overt sexism in that movie that is just not useful. And we can just set it aside and take the valuable things and learn from those.
How about you, Steve?
Well, I'm just going to piggyback on Pat's. It made me think of a movie that my dear significant special lady friend partner has not seen a lot of movies, as many as I have. And so last night I said something about, I was like, you know, like in The Karate Kid. And she's like, I've never seen that. Oh my God, how can you not see The Karate Kid? And The Karate Kid has this amazing example of the spoonful of sugar technique, right? Where on one level, and as a young boy, you know, had a problem with bullies.
Aw.
Yeah, who took a karate class. This was the story. For me, it was about a kid that moved from New Jersey to California and he got made fun of. And then he learns karate and learns how to defend himself. That was the story I needed to hear. But within that story is his teacher, who is played by Pat Morita. And he was imprisoned in a Japanese internment camp and his wife died. And it's just that there's this horrible tragedy in that movie that is wrapped up so well that as a kid, I was not traumatized. It, you know, I kind of took in parts of it as I got older. I took in others and it was talking about Japanese internment camps within a major motion picture about you know, like like almost a teenage exploitation movie. And even growing up in California, like later on, I found out how close I was to actual camps, you know, like grew up within 20 miles of one.
Wow.
Yeah. And it wasn't, you know, we'd have a day or two that we'd talk about it in school, but it wasn't like a known thing. It was like, we're done with that. It's over. And having that within the movie Karate Kid, it's just, in a way, it's like a real achievement and really incredible. And so if you haven't seen The Karate Kid, not the one with Jaden Smith, the old one, the Ralph Macchio.
Or
Hilary Swank. That's right. The original Ralph Macchio Karate Kid. Check it out.
All right. So I think that wraps up another Pop Culture Salvage Expeditions. I want to thank our two experts, Sydney Rayla-Duncombe and Sebastian Rayla-Duncombe.
Thank you.
They're taking bows.
Do you have any final words of wisdom for our podcast audience?
Listen to this.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that one.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Sebi, you got one? Closing words?
I don't know.
That's okay, too. That's okay. I feel that way often at the end of these as well.
We have had a few people rate the show and review it on iTunes. I just want to say thanks. We are rocking 5-star reviews right now.
Yeah,
all right.
And there's some very kind words that have been said there. And if you would care to, we would appreciate it. More than that, if you like the show, please tell your friends and pass it along to them. If there's other people you think might gain something from listening to it, let them know. You'd be doing us a favor.
Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your grandma, tell your grandpa, tell everyone you know.
Okay, thank you, everyone. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again on the Pop Culture Salvage Expeditions.
Bye.
Bye.
On the next episode of the Pop Culture Salvage Expeditions, we're doing something that is very popular. We're going to church on Sunday to a mass. It's going to be good, though. See you then.